Hello and welcome to another episode of Breaking Mayberry, the show that's turned into a home improvement podcast, whether you like it or not. And I said that out loud. I meant home improvement as in like I am improving my home, but I did not mean the TV show with Tim Allen, but now I just get the pun of that show. I understand the title now. I didn't mean to do that. But what I was going to say is I'm talking about like home stuff with the house I just bought. But I guess we could and should and eventually may be a home improvement podcast, but we're not right now. I'm one of your hosts. I'm Marty Schneider.
I'm your other host, Jonathan Taylor Thomas, with my long, luxurious hair. Teen heartthrob. Yeah. I like that. I'm just completely jumping over Al. I'm the kid.
Weird thing, you actually, this is an audio medium, you can't tell, but you can actually only see my eyes and forehead and the fishing hat that I'm currently wearing. Mm-hmm. I'm going to record every episode like that. When I talk about a home improvement podcast, what I mean is, hey, Dan, remember last episode where I said I bought a house?
Yeah, remember, you bought a house.
Yeah, I remember how you said you were like seething with rage and like jealousy? You were like super jealous of me?
Not rage, I'm happy for you, but oh, okay, sweet. Hell yeah.
Don't be happy or jealous.
Okay.
Owning a house is a nightmare. Owning a house is terrible. No one should do it.
Give me one sec. Baby! Marty says buying a house is a nightmare experience. We don't have to be jealous anymore. All right, continue.
To be honest, I've had it pretty well. I knew in advance that there was work that needed to be done. This is a old house. It's an old Philadelphia row home. Turns out like records weren't really kept well very back then. So my house is maybe 1910, 1905, 1950. Mm-hmm. But electricians came in and they laughed. No, it turns out like the electrical system in my house was 100 years of dudes just going, we'll put some more wires on top of these wires. That'll be okay. That'll be fine. And I knew this going in. I knew this going in that I was going to have electric work redone. I didn't know the extent to it. And if I had thought about it, the electrical work's been done. It took like a week to get done. This is the thing that maybe if I had thought about it for like a second, I would have realized, oh, fuck. After this, I need to paint the house. Dan, I'd like you to guess how many holes are currently in my house.
Ooh.
Like holes that were not there 3 weeks ago when I purchased this thing.
15. We'll play
higher or lower. Just what?
15. I'm saying 15. Higher. 20.
Higher.
36.
Higher.
59.
Higher, motherfucker.
102?
Closer. Close. You're zooming in on it.
120.
There are 107 holes in my house right now. Every... Fucking the holes have been plastered over poorly with spackle.
It's but, like you threw a college kegger.
There are 107 holes. And I just like I have to paint. I have to paint the whole house. That's not an option. Right? There are 107 fucking holes. And the thing is that my wife is very much a project person. Mm-hmm. And I am very much not a project person. And normally this kind of marriage arrangement works, but not when one person wants to just be in the other house. And Dan, mm-hmm. I spent 3.5 hours at Lowe's the other day, and we didn't buy anything. It was pure recon. It was just preparation for the work to come. I bought a house that I don't live in. And the timeline for when I will live in it is getting further and further away.
I lived across the street from people who were building the house that they were going to live in. So we would see like at night, they would have a light on and they would just be like building stairs. And for the entire like 3 years I lived in that apartment, I would just come home and be like, still building it. And I feel like that's you. I think there's gonna be some people that are like looking across the street, be like, still painting.
It's painting the whole house, which doesn't take that long, but it also means choosing the paint. But there's also other things, right? Like, I have hardwood floors that haven't been cleaned or waxed in fucking forever, and they all look like shit because of all the dust from all the holes in my wall. So I have to do all of that. And of course, Sarah has decided that, like, now is also a good time to, like, epoxy and refinish the counters and build a backsplash and things. All this is stuff that, like, it is easier to do when the house is empty, but it also means I don't have a house. I have a house. It's just my living situation is one of those old GeoCities pages that always had a under construction GIF poorly animated up at the very top. I live in GeoCities.
So a service
I live in GeoCities, actually, now that I say that out loud. I don't live there. I'd love to live in GeoCities. I can't.
So it sounds like a large... So you're doing all this like recon to decide about decisions that you want to make in the future. And that is like a huge part of what's holding you up is just indecisiveness.
Yeah, man, you would be miserable. Do you have any idea how many choices you have to fucking make?
I can't play
open world video games because there are too many choices.
Oh man, you're missing out, dude. There's a lot of good ones out right now. You gotta check out Sea of Stars.
The electricians were like, hey, where do you want these plugs to go? And I said, what the fuck are you talking about? I have never had this much control of my own destiny. Okay. I have always just built my life to fit the pre-existing infrastructure. Why are you asking me where I want to put things?
Stop talking to me like I'm an adult man.
You do this, magic wire man.
Yes.
Since I give you money, you put the plug in.
God. So I think what you just need is for a friend, you just need to like leave town and then just give your checkbook to a friend who will just make wild decisions for
you. We need to do trading spaces. I need a trading spaces situation.
Might I recommend Dan Ludwig to just make a series of gut impulses? See, I'm very decisive when it's my ass on the line, but for you, I'll have all this shit sorted in 20 minutes. Will you like it? Let's roll the dice. It'll just be Marty's house of gut checks.
Dan, you said you were told to talk about something on the air, and I don't know what this is. What have you been told to talk about?
So I was out with my wife's family, and we were at Olive Garden, and her grandma was there.
Classic place to take the wife's family.
Oh God,
yeah. Olive Garden is home of the in-laws.
God, there will be a nice server and somebody's mom will get very into talking to the server. It'll like, it's just catnip for parents.
It's Outback Steakhouse in my family, but same genre.
So at one point in the meal, her grandma leans in close to me and be like, I have something you should talk about on your podcast. And I was like, okay, yeah, shoot. And she goes, people should not let go of their balloons, because they float over the ocean and then they pop and it harms the fish. And I was like, you got it. So, people, audience that I have, stop letting go of your fucking balloons. All right? They're getting over the ocean. The little toaster was inaccurate. They do not go into space and sing a song about how they're going to die. They just float over. Isn't that in the Brave Little Toaster 2? That like, there's a song.
The Brave Little Toaster had two or three sequels, right? There is The Brave Little Toaster Goes to Mars.
Yes. I'm fairly certain that there is a song in Brave Little Toaster 2 where a bunch of balloons sing about how happy they are that they're going to die.
It doesn't surprise me at all, but please continue your public service announcement. I'm sorry that I interrupted.
That doesn't happen. They go over the damn ocean. They pop. A sea turtle chokes to death on one. So the next time you're like, hey, it'll be pretty sick if we let go of this balloon, stop, think, make better choices. I've fulfilled that promise.
It's good. It's good. Yeah. We're going to clip out just that part we're going to bleep the part where you swore, and we're going to give that to your wife's grandma.
Yes, and, yes. Well, thank you.
And also, I'm just going to go ahead and say, in fact, I'll make a clean version of this. I'll put it up on Patreon for all of your grandmas.
Yes.
And all of your grandmas can enjoy this important public service announcement. Also, I'm just going to say, did y'all know that helium is not a renewable resource?
No, we're so running out of it. Like,
we're using up all the helium. Stop having balloons. Stop having balloons. You don't need them that badly.
It's like limited, and we need it for really important shit, and they just keep letting them put it in balloons. Like every Macy's Day Parade should be so illegal. Why are they doing that? There's so much in there. We're running out. We need it for like medical stuff. Like, I think really important equipment is made out of helium. Like, stop it.
Don't do it anymore.
Yes. We've all seen what it looks like when Garfield is a big balloon. We got it, okay? Stop. We need that helium. Take it out of him.
We as a society have moved past the need for giant Snoopy.
Yes.
We're done.
We have experienced it. We have done every possible permutation of it. Just
listen.
We need that helium.
We're all gonna need to make sacrifices in the coming years. All right?
Yeah. How did we get to paper straws before, hey, let's stop putting a bunch of helium in all the shit? And the next time you think, oh, it'll be real funny when I inhale a bunch of helium and my voice is so squeaky, just think, was that bit worth moving us a little closer to the apocalypse? Probably. It depends on what you said.
It might be. It might be. Like, if you said fart, like, great. Classic. Classic.
Yeah, you get that one. You get that one, but it better have been good.
You know what you might need, though, after the helium apocalypse?
Mm-hmm.
A sword.
Ooh, interesting.
You might need a sword. A cool sword. Axe. You'll probably need some armor, right? And now's a good time to do that and to put these weapons and armor into your prepper basement that you're building in the house you just bought that has 107 holes in it. A good place to get swords and armor for your prepper basement for the post-helium apocalypse is battlingblades.com.
We're so shameless with this. We're not even doing the podcast courtesy thing of doing a musical sting so you know to skip ahead 5 minutes.
Battlingblades.com. Get your swords, knives, axes, armor, really cool kitchen knives, chest sets, cool clothes. Like, there's a whole bunch of stuff on battling cloaks. Do you have a cloak? Yeah. You're going to need one in the post-helium apocalypse.
Yes, God.
Battlingblades.com. 10% off with discount code Mayberry. You know how to spell Mayberry.
Battlingblades.com. Buy a katana so you can defend your property after society collapses.
Battlingblades.com. Please buy an axe. I have 107 holes to patch. Let's get into today's episode.
Battlingblades.com. Do you want to roam the post-apocalyptic landscape like a Ronin? Well, bitch, you're gonna need a sword. Everything we've said about this company has been wildly irresponsible. Battling Blades is going to be the victim of a severe class action lawsuit, and they're going to be like, who the fuck are breaking Mayberry?
Oh, God. Discount code Mayberry.
Edit out the thing where I admit liability.
Well, let's get into today's episodes. We're doing a pair of episodes from season 5. We are going to do 2 episodes. We're going to do them. Let's do the more interesting one first.
Yeah.
We are doing season 5, episodes 29 and 30. So let's talk about season 5, episode 30, Opie Flunks Arithmetic.
Yeah.
Written by Dick Morgan, directed by Kobe Ruskin, originally airs April 19th, 1965. Here is your one sentence summary from Wikipedia. Opie needs to improve in his arithmetic, and Andy gets pressure from Barney to help him. Quick note, this is the last appearance of Barney Fife as a main character on the show, but not the last appearance for us. We have this, obviously, of the next episode we're doing, And we have one more Barney episode that we skipped earlier in the season. We got to circle back to. But this is it. This is our Barney ending. This is
Jesus.
This is the send-off for Dawn.
Oh, my God. We really should have prepared something. Fuck. Oh, that didn't even occur to me. Shit.
I mean, he's going to keep hanging around, though. Like, we'll see him from time to time. So I'm not really upset about it. So, this episode starts off with Andy. You have the note here. Andy almost hits Helen with a fly swatter. And then the next note says, Andy does, in fact, hit her with a fly swatter. And it's a little kinky. Weird thing. Both of these episodes start with Andy killing a fly. I don't think there's any symbolism or connection to that. I just thought it was very interesting.
There was a fly in the writer's room. And, write what you know.
That's almost exactly what happened. I swear that's precisely it.
But Andy does hit her with a fly swatter and Helen goes, ooh, and that is how BDSM was invented.
And and she does like self-deprecating. She's like, well, I'm glad I was good for one thing today.
Yeah. Why? I think this is when the two of them started having an affair because suddenly they have fucking chemistry. Like a little.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They are now banging.
Yeah, I think we can pinpoint that. I agree. We're talking about the real life actors actually this time. This isn't us like doing our read between the lines shtick. No, Andy Griffith and Anita Coruscant were having an affair.
Do you think the director like came up to Andy and was like, we've had problems with you having chemistry with your love interests in the past, but I don't know what you're doing differently now, man, but you finally nailed it. Like, this is really working. Like, what have you been doing? And Andy's just like, his wife is visiting set that day.
Speaking of giving out D's, that's the episode problem, which shows up right here, which is that Opie got a D in arithmetic. That is what Helen came to talk about. Pulls out her, like, parents got to sign the paper form. And Andy's like, D? Well, that's weird. And then he says something like, well, how's he doing in all the other classes? And she says, oh, he's very bright. And he says, oh, yeah, he takes after me that way. And there's like a small, laugh track, like half a laugh track. But then it cuts off where Helen goes, oh, yes, you're very smart. And it's not a joke. This episode has a lot of like half jokes or things where I'm like, is that the start of a joke? Okay, we're moving on.
Yeah.
The fly thing was another one. We've now done two like kind of jokes in this one conversation.
It's a lot of jokes that I would say in a social function if I was like not trying to be funny.
Unfunny jokes. Yes. All jokes you share in a social function. Yes.
Yes, yes. Yeah. Coworker jokes, really.
Coworker jokes. That's a good name for it. That's a good name for it. These are like, kind of jokes. I'll say I like this episode. It's not funny.
No, this is a good
episode, but it is not funny at all.
Oh, this episode filled me with profound rage, like which you will see in my notes, Marty.
Yep.
We're going to be able to pinpoint the parts where it spiked.
So Opie comes in and he's got a football in his hand. He's talking about football and how he was playing football at recess.
How he's really good at football.
He scored four touchdowns.
Yeah.
He's Al Bundy here. And immediately at that point, Helen pieces out. She's like, hi, Opie, bye, Opie, and leaves.
Yeah.
It's fine. Like, whatever.
I can't be teacher and girlfriend simultaneously. It's weird. Goodbye.
Good for her. Boundaries. Yes. Good for you. She leaves and Andy takes the football and it's like, hey, let's talk about your arithmetic. What's going on with this? Why do you have this? What don't you understand? Opie says that we've started long division. He hates it. He blames the paper quality because every time he erases, it rips the paper.
Yeah.
All right, whatever. He has to erase a lot. And so maybe if we had softer erasers, I'd be doing better. And Andy just kind of goes, all right, well, that's not going to fly, but why don't you go outside and play, and then later tonight we'll work on your long division together. And he goes, okay, Pop, and then we move on. Enter Barney.
And so, Opie is, like, on his way out. Barney comes in, and just starts doing the shtick where he was like, you know, they called me old Fast Hands Fife because I was so good at football, and I bet I'm still a legend at your school. People still probably tell stories about how good I was at football. And Opie has just reached the point in his life where he's like, yeah, can I go? Can you give me the ball back so I can leave? And Barney is like, here's the way that you should grip a football when you throw it. And Opie just goes, oh shit, who's the football player?
Okay, I remember this. This is one of the few jokes that's gotten funnier with age.
Yeah.
Which is that Barney says, you have to hold a football right here, right in the center. And Opie says, Johnny Unitas of the Baltimore Colts holds it at the end. And it's very funny that they picked Johnny Unitas, like one of the only quarterbacks from that era that is still known by like casual football fans as like the one of the best ever. Right.
Yes.
So the fact that like they picked the guy who was the best at the time and is still in contention for best ever, like Hall of Famer kind of guy, makes it funnier. And then Barney kind of goes different strokes for different folks and then walks off. Opie walks off.
And so this, yeah, it's so Opie just completely ices him, which is really sick. And so Barney finds the report card, latches onto it, and then what I can only really describe is uses it as a way to lash out at Opie for making him feel small. Opie ices him.
Is that what you think this is?
Okay, that is okay. What I think, because he is on a fucking mission to ruin Opie's life. Like, he is every single thing. He is basically on a mission to destroy a child today. I don't entertain for a fucking second that he genuinely cares about what happens to Opie. Not buy it for a fucking second.
Okay,
he is so here to destroy a child for being rude to him.
I'll buy it. It makes a lot more sense than my theory. My theory was just that, like, for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. Remember, like, when Opie got an A, which was, yeah. was that even this season? That was last season. I think it was last season where Opie got an A, and Barney was all ready to start sending him to fucking Harvard, and also ready to bring out the fucking calipers and measure his skull because he was trying to figure out like his brain juice. So this just seems like the inverse of that, right? Kid gets one A and he is Stephen Hawking. Kid gets one D and ooh boy, maybe college might be out of the question.
So I should also point out that Helen comes in and says, hey, Opie got a D. But she is like, by the way, a bunch of other boys got D's. You know, it's no big deal. It's going around. Kids are sucking at arithmetic lately. It's no biggie. Just tutor him a little bit.
Yeah, a lot of boys are failing, and there's nothing that I could possibly do about that. I have no responsibility for this. She talks about these kids' grades like it's the weather.
Hey, just a heads up. There's a nasty case of shitty at arithmetic going around. just completely outside of her control. Just like, yeah. You're going to run into a little bit of bad arithmetic this time of year. We just got over a nasty snap of not able to conjugate verbs. Like, Barney says like, oh, this is a big deal. Like, oh, this will ruin his future. He's bad at arithmetic now. He'll be bad at it later, which will mean he can't get into college. And Andy is like, I'm tutoring him. It's fine. I got it. And then Barney like sits down and starts like reading the paper and grumbles passive aggressively. Like, if I was his parent.
Hey, Dan, said that I would be able to tell in your notes when you got mad? Is it this bullet point right here that says I would beat the fuck out of him?
I would beat the living fuck out of him. If somebody was like, if I was talking about like raising my kid and you like sat down and were like, well, you know, apparently people can just be shitty parents all they want these days. Like in the room with me, you're getting a concussion. There's no two ways about it. Like he basically mutters like, well, you know, if you want to be a real piece of crap parent, that's your fucking deal. You can do whatever you want. Like basically he's like a step away from like if Andy hadn't interrupted what he did, be like, you know, I'm a parent, maybe I should call CPS, get him taken away. You're clearly ruining this kid's life by being such a shitty dad. Like,
Andy's mad. Andy's actually mad. He's like, this is just long division. I'm taking care of it. Fuck off.
Yes.
Right? Like, keeping up with our little spike in Andy just, like, being over this shit. Goober meter's just jumping up a couple points. The next scene is straight up 3.5 minutes of math.
Yes. Just so much math. Which, like, so, yeah. Andy comes home. Sees Opie doing his arithmetic, sits down to help him learn long division.
There's a little bit here that I do like, just a small like set and actor note I want to take note of, and I didn't catch until like the second or third time I watched this, which is that when Andy sits down at the desk, he's talking about like how to learn things and without calling attention to it, he pulls a toy airplane off of Opie's desk and moves it off to the side, indicating that Opie had been playing with the airplane the whole time instead of doing his arithmetic.
Yeah.
And I liked that. I didn't catch it at first viewing. I like how they don't make a big deal out of it, but I did like that, just that little note that he just like takes the airplane and moves it away while he's explaining this. So I thought that was neat. Continue.
So there is just a protracted sequence of, they are doing long division, like how to divide 162 by 8.
14 is 14.
Yeah. And they do it. And it is doing that. And I am realizing, holy shit, I do not remember how to do long division. Oh, my God. What has happened to me? What have they done to me?
The joke here is that Opie keeps doing the kid thing and asking why. But it's because Helen Crump said, you know, you have to be able to explain why we do this. So, but he's asking why at all the wrong points. He's asking why, like, why do I put this number here and this number here? And Andy says, well, you do that because it's the rule, which is kind of the only answer you can give there.
Yeah. Why do I draw the line? Like, because that's how you do it.
But then, like, by the way, we never ever get to the actual reason why Opie's flunking arithmetic, because so far he walks through the whole thing. You go step by step. We see so much math and he gets it, like he's doing everything correctly. And then we get to the remainder. It's not a nice even kind of division. We get to the remainder point and Andy says, and then you're going to bring down a decimal and put down two zeros. And Opie goes, why? And I go, why? And Dan goes, why? Like, all of us are like, wait, what? You put down the two zeros. What side of the decimal do you put the two zeros on? I guess if you put two zeros on the left side of the decimal, that might make sense, because then you're doing decimal work on the other. What?
Technology has ruined us. I don't remember.
No, that's okay. We may not have been taught that way, right? Because like every 20, 25 years, there are new standards and new ways for teaching math, which is also a very real, like this episode is still relevant, because that's a very real concern for parents every single day, is that the way that we learned math is different than the way children were learning math, and it's different than the way that our parents learned math. So how the fuck do we do anything? So I'll give him that. But yeah, I sat there going, what?
Yeah.
What? I don't think I can answer the question.
No, it's, So it doesn't go great. And cut to out front.
3 or 4 minutes of math.
Like, just straight up math. cut to out front where Barney has just appeared like a monster and is asking Aunt B about it. Be like, while making passive aggressive comments, be like, so how do you feel about how fucked Opie is? Because he's a dullard who will never get into college. How do you feel about his life, his future as a manual laborer?
For the record, this is the next day.
Yes.
This is not like he's standing in front of their house. This is the next day he meets Aunt B on the street.
Yeah.
He meets Aunt B on the street. She walks out of the grocery store. She's carrying her groceries. He offers to give her a ride home, and she goes, no, Claire's picking me up. And then he just straight up looks inside of her grocery bag, which I thought was fucked up. He's like, what's going on? He puts his hand on the bag and like and pokes it open and goes, looks like a good supper. Dude, get the fuck back. What the hell?
So he is telling Aunt B, hey, your son is not going to get into college, giving this poor woman a panic attack. he straight up tells her that Opie is going to, might be a high school dropout. Like, and she's like blaming herself. She'd be like, well, I was never that good at math. And he's like, oh yeah, well then it's probably genetic. Your son is genetically predisposed to not go to college. So
we just cannot talk enough about how Barney is like a eugenicist.
He is a eugenicist. He is trying to destroy a child. He is waging a jihad upon this boy. Yeah, so
you really don't believe that this is like out of love or concern at all?
No.
You don't think so? It's like,
I don't think, it doesn't seem like it, because he ambushes Opie, because, all right, he starts pushing so hard. He doesn't want Opie to go to college. He wants Opie to go to a vocational school. He wants everybody to write, because that's what he keeps pushing for. Like, well, you know, he's probably not going to be college material, so you should start looking for vocational schools. And then he tries to quiz Opie to come up with, to put together a case to send this boy to vocational school. So he's not trying to make sure that Opie does better in school so that he gets into college. He's trying to make everybody write Opie off as an idiot and like seal his fate. I don't think he has like a concrete agenda, but I think he's just lashing out, because it immediately is preceded by Opie just not giving a shit about anything he says anymore.
But this is pretty consistent with a pattern of behavior with Barney. Again, referring back to the episode where he got an A and Barney reacted with just as much fervor in the opposite direction, like genuine joy and like wanting Opie to, you know, succeed. Probably because it would bring back. Because remember, he is kind of like the whole premise of this show is that it's kind of a My Two Dads kind of situation. It's Two and a Half Men. He does see himself as Opie's secondary father figure.
But so, and I think an important thing is, and you know, yeah, we're ending the Barney Fife era, and I think I can say pretty definitively that my thesis about this character is he's incapable of love. I think truly what I believe is that there is no good in this man, and he would slit Opie's throat for a $5 pay raise. Yeah, so I think any inklings he has about what is good or bad for Opie is all about himself and his ego and his vision of himself as Opie, the person that knows how Opie should be raised. But yeah, I don't think he gives a fuck about Opie. I don't think he gives a fuck about Andy or Aunt B or anybody in this town. I think he would kill them all without a second thought.
You know what, man? I have no counter argument for this.
Yeah.
I'm going with this reading. So later on in the living room, Aunt B is like asks about it and says, hey, ran into Barney. Is there something I should be concerned about? She's freaking out. She's like, yes, really worried. And Andy's just so pissed. He's like, I wish Barney would shut the fuck up. I want him to stay out of it. He says, Barney thinks he's an expert on everything. I can't think of a single person in the world less qualified to talk about this than him. And then Barney shows up. Hey, who y'all talking about?
And she's like, Barney is speaking very authoritatively on this. Be like, yeah, have you noticed that Barney speaks very authoritatively on everything, but when you actually get down to it, doesn't seem to know shit. Like, he's just kind of like,
he's an authoritarian.
Really, yes. Like, have, yeah, like, it's kind of, it does feel like in a way of like them like winding down for Barney leaving, because Andy is just more and more like, yeah, Aunt B, when you really think about it, this guy's the fucking worst. Have you noticed that? Have you noticed that he sucks shit and I hate him?
Barney enters with a magazine, like a Newsweek or something, that he says he just found, but it's like got articles in it about like the decline of America's youth and the bleak future that America has, and statistics on like what's going to happen if Opie doesn't get into college, and just the way that we live right now. And I didn't catch this at first. I didn't catch, because he does a couple things. He says, I came across this. And then later on in the conversation, he says, this magazine's already a year old. That's how bad it's getting. how the hell did you just come across a year old magazine that just happens to have the information that is relevant to the topic? He went to the fucking library.
He went to the goddamn stacks in the library and he fucking chased. He probably combed through like 400 magazines.
There was a card catalog involved in this. Like, he harassed a librarian until she found something for him. Like,
he played classical music while meticulously thumbing through articles, and then he found one of like dumb statistics about how hard it is to get into college, and then he just smiled serenely. Yeah, fucking sociopath, dude.
So he comes in and he says, like, maybe we'll send Barney, or maybe you'll have to send Opie to one of those bum 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 vocational schools, which doesn't make any fucking sense. I cannot imagine the education rate in Mayberry is very high. I'm willing to bet most people in Mayberry went to a vocational school, right? Or they just learned on the job. I mean,
yeah,
I don't know. The town only has like 5 people we ever see, but right, like,
it's the 60s. There's like 4 colleges. Like, yeah, most people did this shit. It's not the end of the world. It's also, it's the 60s. You can have, like, your job could be a guy who has a truck. And
this is true.
Make
this
a good true. On it. Your job.
I'm going to go ahead and point out here, there were many, many colleges in the 60s. Like, doing a lot of stuff. A lot of stuff was happening on college campuses in the 60s.
Yes, I know. But yes, up until like the 80s, you could have your job could be odds and ends. You know, like, I have a truck, I have a box of tools, sometimes things need doing and I do them. And on that salary, you could support a family of 5. Like, yeah, you did. Like, this is not the end of the fucking world.
Yeah, they really like, you know that scene in It's a Wonderful Life where Jimmy Stewart is going through Bedford Falls if he never lived, and he, you know, goes, you know, what about my wife? What happened to Mary? Where's Mary? And Clarence says, oh, that's the saddest fate of all. She never married and became a librarian. And like that, she's been doomed to this horrible life of just being a single librarian. Oh no! Oh, that's the treatment they have for Opie here. If he becomes a plumber, I'm sorry. Would you like to hear more of my Jimmy Stewart impression? Because I'll do more.
There is.
You want the moon, Dan? You want the moon, buddy? I'll lasso it up and I'll give it to you. And I'll put it right in your eye.
What's his? Dana Carvey had a thing he does where it's he had a bit he used to do where he would do an impression of Jimmy Stewart saying "fuck you," like, oh well, fuck you. Like,
you ever see Mr. Smith Goes to Washington?
Yeah,
dude, pretty much just runs through town just punching reporters in the face. He definitely dropped at least 2 or 3 F bombs.
Okay. Get fucked.
Jimmy Stewart just running through DC, just running down K Street, telling fucking Michael Tracy to piss off. Get fucking pissed, Tracy. That one came out like more Shoresy than anything.
Yeah, you're pushing it. You're pushing it too hard. You're taking this car and you're driving it too fast. You're going around corners. Okay. So, yeah, Barney does this act of fucking terrorism against Andy's home. And Ampy is really scared. Andy is seething with rage. He storms over to Helen's house and he is just like, hey, can you tell me if everything Barney is saying is bullshit or not? And Helen gives like a very conservative answer of like, yes. Getting into college is getting a little harder. And yes, if Opie were to never learn arithmetic, then yes, it probably would make it so he can't get into school. And this is sort of like the turning point where Andy is ruined. Yeah. Like, he is.
He stands up. He's like, I gotta go. And he just walks out of the room. He goes back home and he's the villain, right? He walks in and Opie's just like hanging out on the couch. He's like reading a comic book or whatever. And he just walks back in and he goes, upstairs, get upstairs. Now you go study arithmetic.
Yeah. And it's like, it's harsh and it's like unpleasant. The shock on Lil Ronnie Howard's face when this happens is just like some condition between them has been violated. Some understanding they had of like, Andy does not talk to him this way. So yeah.
I like this because like Andy's allowed to be flawed, which makes the show more interesting.
Yes. When Andy is not the perfect parent, and it is, he is spiraling. Barney has gotten into his head. He has been psyched out as a parent. Continuing to push it, Barney corners Opie when he is isolated.
This is, again, the next day. This is now a 3-day process.
Yes. And proceeds to give him an aptitude test to prove that Opie should go to vocational school. And the questions are fucking stupid. Like, would you rather paint a boat or read a book? And
I mean, these are the same kind of fucking questions that we took in high school for those vocational tests, right?
Yeah.
They're very similar. I took the ASVAB in college, or I'm sorry, in high school. The ASVAB, the Armed Services Vocational Aptitude Battery Test. Why the fuck do I remember that off the top of my head? Which is the one you were supposed to take if you were going to go in the military. Yeah, this guy right here should have been a fucking military man. It was the Bush era. Things were very weird.
Yeah.
But
they were taking all comers on that.
Yeah. So I took the ASVAB test in high school and it had just shit like this. And it's all stuff like, would you rather build a boat or read a book? If you could have a present, would you rather have a motor or a chemistry test?
It's and so we did take that, and that was basically a holiday at our school because everybody would just go around and be like, come read this dumb shit this test thinks I should do. And it would be like, I got something of like, I should be an ATV repairman. Like, it would be like, hey, this dumb piece of paper thinks that Jeff should be a chef. Like, oh, check it out. I got parakeet doctor. That's fucking weird. Like, they would just be like, so almost perfectly mismatched to that individual person. They were wrong in such a perfect way that it almost required better insight than getting it right. So yeah, fuck those tests.
Fuck those things. I did take those tests. I actually did just look it up, and apparently I was completely wrong about the ASVAB. They actually asked questions about like physics and shit. Fuck it. All right. Who gives a shit?
I think mine was like, I'm going to commit lots of tax fraud. I think it was something like that of like petty white collar crimes.
It's a very weird. Why would they even have that entry?
I don't know. Like they were like, it was just like, mine was just like, you're not going to pay taxes from 2014 through 2027. And I was like, that's very specific.
In high school, I was voted most likely to embezzle.
I fill out my aptitude test and it's like, you're going to embezzle a lot of money from a jet ski salesman in Jacksonville, Florida.
So specific.
Your ultimate job is going to be hiding out in South America. So that happens. It's not going poorly because Opie is giving complex answers.
Right.
Reflecting a child with thoughts and feelings who doesn't want his entire consciousness put into a yes or no answer about a boat or a book. Like, his joke is like, I would read a book about boats.
It's not even a joke, right? It's just him being very honest because you put the idea in his head. And he walks in and he's like, oh, fuck this.
Yeah. Sends Opie out like he is about to beat the shit out of Barney. Like you need to leave and don't look back, boy.
And he says, I will handle this. You stay out of this. I'm the boy's father. Don't be here at all anymore. And then Barney says, okay, well, I'll see you tonight. Aunt B invited me over. So now we're at dinner, and Opie is just fucking like staring at his cake and just poking at it and being depressed. And Aunt B's like, oh, maybe we're going a bit too far here.
Yeah, like, I think her thing was like, I was in the grocery store and somebody told me that Einstein dropped out of college, and that made me think that maybe this has gone wildly out of control. And Opie is very clearly suffering from, like, clinical depression at this point. Like, he's not eating, he won't make eye contact with anybody, he's visibly miserable.
One of the things I don't like about the way they write Aunt B is how she always seems to take on the opinion or the thought process of whoever spoke to her last. And this is a pretty good example of it, right? Barney,
guy at the grocery store changed her entire worldview on human intelligence, like in like 3 minutes in front of the produce.
And then we get a little bit of like, I like this scene because Aunt B gives a little monologue, like, Frances Bavier gets to fucking do something. So she gets to talk about how, like, she could have gone to college. She wishes she had, you know? But she was always really good at chemistry, but she never really got the chance to go to college. And then that movie about Marie Curie came out, and all of these women were interested in chemistry, but it was too late for her.
Yeah, it's deeply sad. And mournful, haunting. And it is followed by Barney being like, yeah, I didn't pay attention in school because I was too busy trying to get my dick wet. I think he was just...
I don't know why I'm taking Barney's side here, but he also gets a little bit of a little thing like, yeah, I kind of blew my shot at college too because I couldn't pay attention. You know, my brain wandered. I thought about girls a lot, wasted a lot of time, and I don't know. I could have been an FBI agent. Like, all three of our adults here kind of like sit and reflect on their failures in their past for a second.
Yeah.
It's a good moment. I'm not going to be that shitty to Barney here. Like, Barney is also
little remorseful. I'm already going hard enough as is.
It's mostly because I really like this scene. I really like all three of our adults kind of sitting there going like what could this have been? Like, what could we have been here? If things had gone different, it's just, it's kind of let it linger, but it's like, and I appreciate that. It's a good acting moment and it's the most real I've felt with these characters in a long time. I will say this, right? You have written in your notes here, Aunt B delivers a sad monologue about her sad life. Barney recalls how he's a fucking moron.
Yes.
Next day, we are now on day 4 of this, at least, because maybe more time has passed in there. I'm just assuming these are consecutive days. Helen comes in and to the jail to talk to Andy and lets him know that Opie is actually doing even worse now.
Yeah.
And Andy's like, what the hell? I've got him studying all the time. He's going to have to work harder. God.
He's just like deranged at this point. He's just like, boy has to work harder, must work, just study more, he bad, he must study until, like, he's just like having a nervous breakdown. If they could film it this way, he would be just chain smoking cigarettes. Like, and she's just kind, Helen is like, you gotta calm down, you're pushing him too hard, you're not letting him have any fun, and it's causing him to have a nervous breakdown, which is making him do worse in classes. And it goes very poorly.
Yeah.
She calls him a hysterical parent. He's like, I'm his father. I tell him what to do. Don't undermine me. And then she storms out and says, I don't think your way has been too darn successful. Which
she also calls him Mr. Taylor, right? All of a sudden, this is like no longer Andy, my boyfriend. This is Mr. Taylor, my student's father.
Yes. Right?
She says, I'm sorry to get in your way, Mr. Taylor, but you're screwing this up, essentially. Good characterization for Helen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good for her.
Basically, the way she's doing it is like, you just, like, you are acting like the kind of parent that I don't have this relationship with. Like, you are acting like a parent that I have to be divorced from in this way. You just stopped being a personal relationship. You are now a work problem.
Yeah. loved all of this. The only thing I don't like about this, I mean, not that it matters, is we never really do figure out why Opie is having problems with arithmetic. And I guess it doesn't matter because he turns it around by the end of the episode, you know.
I think it's just he got in the weeds with it conceptually for a little bit. I think it's just like I think what Andy was saying eventually, which is like, he'll get it. He's just a little slow. Yeah, yeah. Helen's a good teacher. She'll get to him. And so we
get the moment. We get the father-son moment later on that night in Opie's room where Andy comes in and he sees that Opie is depressed, right? And you know, he says, I heard that you got to play football today because Helen let him do that. Helen was like, get out of here, kid. Just go play football for a little bit.
Yeah.
But Opie also sucked at football because he's just got his brain is just fucked right now.
Yeah.
And they come to the happy medium that Aunt B suggested. He was like, I'm going to let up on you. You focus on being a kid. Try not to fumble and just, you know, try your best. Just another one of those, you know, Andy and Opie like lessons. And that's it. Thanks, Pa. And that's it. We close on this. Helen comes next day. Helen comes by again. We're on day 5, 6 of this now. No, it's got to be like a week later. It's got to be like the following.
Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, yeah. Because by this point, Opie's figured it out and he got a B+ on his arithmetic test this time.
And Barney starts saying like, well, you know what's going to happen then is he gets one A, he wants another A. And then he becomes addicted to good grades. It's all I can think about. He becomes good grade crazy. He stops going out. He stops talking to girls. He becomes one of them, their introverts. And now he's a misfit. He's an outcast of society.
While he's saying this, they just leave. They just walk away. They send him to the other room. And while he's talking, they just bail.
Does feel like a definitive closing statement on the character. But yeah, proving my point that it really did not matter whether what Opie had done, Barney was going to find a way to say there is a problem with this child that needs to be fixed.
Yeah. Okay. Yep. You kind of win on that.
Yeah. All right. So that's the end of the episode. I did write just before they just leave. Basically, they just, while his back is turned, they just walk out. I did write beat his ass. I was angry. Yeah, so let's do scores.
Scores. All right. Andy Meter, how much did I like this episode? I liked this episode a lot. It could be funnier, but I'm willing to put it at like an 8, maybe an 8.5. Like this because it feels like a very real problem. These feel like real characters. It's a problem that still is resonant today. You know, very much so. And so I liked this. I liked the performances are all top notch. There's little good direction moments that I saw. So I'm talking myself to this is a, it's still not very funny. It's an 8, maybe an 8.5.
I'm going to say just from how not funny it is, I'm going to put it at like a 7, I think. Like it's well constructed. It's well written. It's this sort of, like Rube Goldberg machine of human emotion. I mean, it's sort of like fucking Othello in a way, in the way it's constructed with Barney as Iago, just slowly preying on people's insecurities.
Okay.
Until they reach a horrible conclusion. But yeah, it's not very, there's all the jokes are bad. So a 7.
Yeah. So, Barney Meter, meaning like how much damage did this do to the country, like psychic damage? None. Zero.
Zero.
Barney Meter's zero.
Ultimately,
if anything, this is a positive.
Yes.
Right. Like if anything, this taught, you know, America to like ease up on your kids a little bit.
Yeah. Which stop hitting them. maybe on Tuesdays you don't hit them.
But Goober Meter, which is our new measure of how fucking over this shit is Andy. This is pretty close. He comes really close to just assaulting his friend. And
this really feels like he is done with Barney. Like,
yeah,
it truly feels like he is just like, he doesn't want him to come over for dinner anymore. Like he doesn't want to spend time with this man.
This is Banshees of Inverson.
Yes, it is really like, I don't like you anymore. like dang it, Barney, you come to my house again, I'm gonna have to cut off a finger. I done told you. Don't have to throw some fingers at your front door. You can't play guitar.
So, yeah, this is like 9. It's a 9 on the goober meter.
Yeah.
It's really high.
He has a nervous breakdown about the future of his son. He openly says, like, hey, I fucking hate Barney. And yeah, he is pushed to like the brink of physical violence just by this guy constantly undermining him. And like, he can't turn his back on this shit for 5 seconds because suddenly his friend is doing a bunch of weird shit with a fucking aptitude test in his kid. Like,
isn't it interesting that his final episode is the one like where like Andy just come out and says, I fucking hate this guy.
Yeah.
Like, again, maybe I feel like there's some meta stuff here. I feel like Andy, the actor, was mad at Don, the actor, for leaving. And some of that kind of sneaks in here.
Yeah.
But
this is his final episode. Like, this is the last time he is on the show as a main cast
member. As a main character. He will have recurring bits and he'll come back a few times as a guest star, essentially.
There's not like an episode that's like, goodbye, Barney.
There's no send off to Barney. I have no idea how they're gonna explain this.
So that is incredible.
I guess it's sort of appropriate. It's sort of appropriate that we didn't come up with anything either. Right.
Like, I mean,
my excuse for being a bad podcaster.
Sorry. This snuck up on me. I really planned on like my Barney Fife send off being, you know, a send off that I myself build on.
We put more effort into saying goodbye to Bob Sweetie.
We put more effort into saying goodbye to the mayor.
Yeah, that feels appropriate.
All right, I mean, rest in piss. Like, fuck you.
But it's not Barney's last time on our show. Let's go back an episode. Let's hit the rewind. Season 5, episode 29, The Luck of Newton Monroe, directed by Kobe Ruskin, written by Idelson and Bobrick, airs April 12th, 1965. A peddler, Don Rickles, keeps having bad luck, and Andy and Barney try to help. So I'm just going to say this right off the bat. Don fucking Rickles is in this episode.
Yes.
Hall of Fame comedian. One of the greatest roasters insult comics of all time.
I would say arguably the
Don
greatest.
Rickles. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Like the guy. He's on this and he does no jokes.
He does the opposite of his bit. That is, it's insane. You know how, Don Rickles, the guy that makes fun of people and is just kind of a relentless machine of teasing and belligerence that just peppers you constantly with insults and jabs. What if he, instead of doing that, was a bitch? What if instead of that machine gun of wit and sarcasm and casual cruelty, he blubbered about how sad he is and how bad he is at stuff. Is that better? Do you like that? Also, this episode is written. This, I think, might be the... No, this is not the worst written episode. This episode is really badly written.
It's
because it
gibberish.
Says,
it makes it, no sense.
They truly cannot figure out what the fuck Don Rickles' character is. They cannot figure out if he is a fast-talking con man. They cannot figure out if he is a sad sack. They have no idea what his fucking deal is. It feels like they wanted him to be a slimy piece of shit and then bailed halfway through and tried to make him a sympathetic sad boy.
You know what it reminds me of is that episode we did about the Golden Girls failed spinoff that turned into a different thing, Empty Nests versus Empty Nest. The one where like there was they were basically rewriting characters during commercial breaks.
Yeah.
There was a guy named Mr. Fix-It whose thing was that he had multiple personality disorder, and they brought him in for a scene, and they're like, "That's not working. Toss it, focus on that." Like, they were doing rewrites on set. That's what this feels like.
It feels like somebody was like, hey, people don't want to watch Don Rickles be mean. Like, that's not what people come here for. Can we make him, like, sad? And what if he had, like, really bad luck?
And also, it's so, they're so confused that they just started pulling pages from old scripts, quite literally.
Yes.
Because this episode opens with a fucking pop on the porch joke again. If you know what I'm talking about, verbatim.
Fucking verbatim. Like, copy, paste, not an exaggeration. They are sitting on the porch, and Barney says, "I'm going to go to the filling station. I'm going to get a soda. I'm going to take a nap. I'm going to go over Thelma and Louise and watch some TV. That's what I'm going to do." Repeat it 4 fucking times. The joke is that he's repeating it a lot. So, to be clear, they are repeating a joke about repeating a thing a lot. They yes. have gone up there. It's almost clever, except it's not, because they're just being fucking lazy. The joke itself is being lazy, because you're just trying to say a thing enough that it becomes funny.
I would be shocked to learn that there were actual paper copies of this on the set. I feel like Kobe Ruskin might have just been like, "Hey, Andy, Don, remember that thing we did last April? Do it again."
Yeah.
And just let them go from memory. I'd be shocked if there were actual paper copies of the script. Like, it's madness. So they do the exact same joke that we've seen before. It's not a joke. It's just Barney repeating something over and over again. Look, I know, speaking of repeating things, I know we go back to this well a lot, but I cannot emphasize enough how fucking cushy a job on this show was. Cushy it was to be a writer for a TV comedy in 1965, where you'd be like, "Listen, 2 years ago, only like 35% of the country had TV at all. I'm just going to go back and reuse this scene, because I can be reasonably sure that no one saw it the first time."
It must have been like a producer walked into the writer's room and was like, "Ruskin, Don Rickles is here. He's ready to start shooting." And they were like, "Oh, we were doing some 1960s writer stuff. We wanted to see what happened
if you give an
orangutan." "We wanted to see what happens if you give an orangutan cocaine." And then we had to do CPR on the orangutan. And the day really got away. He's here. He's on set. Okay. All right. Okay. I can do this. Does anybody have a tape recorder and a way to get rid of a dead orangutan? Okay, so they do the first panicked move is like, all right, we gotta buy some time. What's our longest, dullest joke? We need something that's gonna eat up about 4 minutes. The soda joke, just do that again. Okay, all right, that buys us some time. And then they're like, all right, and then Barney does, in fact, go to the filling station.
Just in case we were all wondering what it would look like if Barney went to the filling station.
Yeah, okay. All right, he goes to the filling station, and there's a traveling salesman there. Traveling salesman. We can just put Don Rickles in a fucking suit.
Barney goes to the filling station. He meets with Goober. Goober is like, "Hey, check out this radio I just bought from this guy selling stuff out of his car." He goes over there, and the traveling salesman, Don Rickles, is selling a watch to Floyd. And Barney goes, "That watch is a little big, isn't it?" And Don Rickles zooms in on this like, "What the fuck is wrong with you, man?
Your friend just bought a watch. Why would you insult the watch?" And then he goes like, "Oh, yeah, you don't have a date on that thing. Why would you point out another defect with a watch? I just pointed out that was a dick thing to do." So impressively taking him to task on the sort of under the radar act of cruelty.
That's the closest he gets to doing his Don Rickles bit.
Yeah.
By the way, in the previous scene, we established that tomorrow is Thelma Lou's birthday, and Barney doesn't know what to get her because she already has everything. And also, as my friend has pointed out, he is incapable of love. He has no sense of empathy whatsoever.
And his
He has eaten a lot of lead paint. He's eaten a lot of lead paint, and the part of his brain that allows him to feel things for other people, to consider other people's emotions, that is silly putty. He could actually use that part of his brain, and you could put it on a newspaper comic, and he would fill it up, and you'd be like, hey, look, it's the family circus. That is his empathy parts of his brain.
You know how he's always talking about, like, jobs that he could have? Like, oh, I could be a commando. I could be a private investigator. I could be a football star. I could have all these jobs. There is one that you have just made me realize he is uniquely qualified to do, which is he would be a pretty good CIA agent. A deep lack of empathy and no fucking idea what's going on. Drop that man into South America and...
Well, guess what? We find out in the very next episode he's not qualified because they only take college graduates. He specifically says that he had an in at the FBI, but he couldn't get there because they only take college graduates. They say that in the next episode.
Marty, if Barney Fife had gone to college, he would be a defining figure in American foreign policy.
He would be Henry Kissinger. He would be Kissinger.
If he had gotten waitlisted at Rutgers State University, he could have been like CIA director within 10 years.
By the way, if this movie or if this show bothered to remember ever that Barney and Andy are veterans, like, they both could have gotten in on the GI Bill. Like, there's no reason why either of those dudes. Maybe Andy had to stop because he got his wife pregnant. But, like, there's no reason why Barney couldn't have gone to school. Whatever. Anyway,
so
Barney has to buy something from Thelma Lou for her birthday.
And he explicitly states, I plan on putting no effort into this.
Right.
Her birthday is tomorrow. I'm going to buy something on the day of her birthday. It will be the first thing I see.
Right. And Don Rickles is like, okay, you want to buy something for your girlfriend. How about this ring, doing like actual salesman? And yes. He's like, oh, no, I don't want her to be happy.
I don't want her, quote, getting ideas. And
Don Rickles is like, okay, well, what about a pencil sharpener? Like, as a joke. And then Barney says, that's actually not a bad idea. And then Don Rickles says, what about high-quality swords and axes from BattlingBlades.com?
Have you thought about whether or not your wife needs any throwing stars. What about some throwing stars or nunchaku? Have you thought about that?
You know what makes a house a home? Viking drinking glasses shaped like barrels. These are actual things you can buy at BattlingBlades.com. Discount code Mayberry. Let's keep going. I'm not letting the plug.
Okay.
They are really cool glasses.
Yeah.
So anyway,
Don Rickles sells Barney a fur, which is just a mink. Well, fur. I mean,
that's what a lot of like mink furs look like.
Yeah.
The only research I did on this at all is I tried to figure out like how much a mink fur should cost then, and how much like it would cost now. But the thing is, we don't really make mink coats anymore, so everything I could find was vintage.
Yeah.
Today, one of those would probably run you $150 to $300 on, you know, eBay.
Yeah. So, okay. So this sales scene happens. And I gotta say, did you go into this 100% sure that the whole thing was just going to be Don Rickles is playing a fast-talking, sleazy salesman who rips people off, right?
That's what they set it up for.
Yeah, it's very clearly the tone and pattern of this scene. Don Rickles is smarter than Barney. He is reeling him in. He is ripping him off. He has ripped off Floyd. At one point, Barney starts to point out that Floyd has bought a shitty watch. Don Rickles intercepts him, berates him, distracts him. Like, yeah, they clearly set up that he's a fucking shark ripoff salesman.
Yeah, like the kind of bad guy we've seen on this show before.
Yeah.
Sure. So, yeah, classic thing.
So cut to Barney in the kitchen, and Barney is just talking about how incredibly well the gift of the fur went. Thelma Lou cried. She was hysteric with joy. And Andy asks how much Barney paid for it. Barney, like, is coy about it. And is like, oh, you don't ask somebody like that. And Andy is like, the fuck I don't. You would ask me that over and over again until I broke down. And Barney says he paid 13 and a quarter for it. And Andy is like, that should be like $50. That was stolen. You can't get a fur for $13. And Barney was like, yeah, no, he was in the right place at the right time. And, you know, got it on clearance.
The most stolen goods thing I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Here's what confuses me about this is that the episode seems to confuse stolen goods with counterfeit goods. Because yes, the next scene where we find out that everybody's goods are bad, right?
Yes.
Goober's radio fell apart. Floyd's watch is spinning out of control. Thelma Lou's, like, the hair is falling out of her mink. And I don't understand. What do you think stealing is? Like, what? These are not cursed relics. Like, stealing them from a fucking warehouse does not automatically, like, cheapen their value and, like, lessen their lifespan. What is going on?
It's hard to say. So Andy clearly figures out of, like, oh, I was wrong when I said it was stolen because I was assuming that this was actually a good fur. Clearly they were just shitty. Andy starts referring to it as junk, but nobody else stops referring to it as stolen. So right, it's hard to say is it bad writing or is everybody just dumb? And that's kind of part of the joke. Hard to tell because this episode is a disaster.
Yeah. So they go out onto the street and Andy and Barney, like go up to the guy who's selling stuff out of his car. He's like trying to sell a bowl of like a noodle bowl, like a Chinese noodle bowl to a couple. And they get into a big fight. Barney and the salesman start screaming at each other. Andy tries to get him on, you know, say, you don't have a bill of sale. You don't have anything here. And nope, that's legit. Like they check. It's not stolen. They find out that it's not stolen. But Andy gets him on the technicality like, okay, you're supposed to have a license to sell here and you don't. So
he refers to it as junk. I'm not going to let you peddle junk. And the guy is like, so Rickles is putting on a big show because Barney like kind of overplays his hand early on and calls him a thief. So he's like, aha, I'm not technically, this isn't stolen. So I have him on a technicality, which I can use to derail this situation and just undermine their whole argument. And he's like trying to like whip the crowd up into a furor. And like, get everybody on his side and be like, he called me a thief. Like he overstepped and Andy just kind of like shuts it down. And I mean, it is the benefit of, being a cop that selectively enforces the law is, being like in America, everybody is kind of breaking the law all the time. It's broken taillight
theory.
Like, therefore you can just get rid of somebody being like, I wasn't going to do this, but you're technically breaking a law by standing here right now. So go away or I'll arrest you. So that's what he does to Rickles. And cut to the jail, like immediately after. And Barney has arrested him.
Yes, because he was supposed to leave and he didn't. Right. So he's still selling on the street after Andy told him to leave. And I'll point this out, right? The exact moment that that Barney pulls him into lockup is Andy's like, okay, I got to fill this out. I'm going to pull you into this. We'll fill out some paper. I'm going to give you a citation. And it's the exact moment where Barney decides to lock him up is when Andy asks for the guy's address and Rickles says,
I know what you're about to say.
The exact moment he asked for the address is when Rickles says, what address? I live in my car. And then Barney goes, that's it. You're going to jail.
Kill Bill music play. Bwah, bwah, bwah,
This show really thinks that being homeless is a crime.
It curdles a bloodlust in Barney Fife. It fills him with a deep and profound rage of like, this motherfucker doesn't own property.
So they toss him into jail, or he's gonna toss him into jail, and Rickles says something like, what are you gonna do? You gonna let me sit in a cell? And Barney goes, oh, you're not sitting, because it's time for prison labor, baby!
So, okay. And so this is where the show abruptly changes from the thing it was, and then the core premise around what Rickles' deal is just changes, because he is no longer a fast-talking salesman. He is a loser. He is a luckless loser that can't do anything right. All of the chores that he does for Barney, he fucks up, and it breaks something, and it costs them money. And I think the logic that they go with is, oh, he actually thought he was selling good merchandise, but actually, he was just so bad at it that he accidentally sold everybody crap. He's just unlucky.
Which from this moment on, it's the Cousin Virgil episode.
Yes.
Again, we've seen this before in season two, where there was just an actual jinx. Barney had a cousin who was just like fucking unlucky and just bad at stuff, and that was just the whole thing. This becomes that episode for the entire time.
And I don't think we have to go into everything. He tries to plant a tree. He hits a water pipe. He tries to clean their furnace. He forgets to open the flue. He mops. He breaks a bookcase.
Which is exactly what Cousin Virgil did.
Yes, they're just recycling shit. But yeah, it is really like...
It's very confused that like their prison slave, basically, their jail slave, is sad because he's not good at anything. And I gotta say, like, at this point, I thought that there was gonna be a twist in the end. He's just fucking with him. Like, I thought this was going to end with him pulling one over on them.
I was so positive that the big ending reveal was he faked being bad at stuff to fuck with them back until they got frustrated and let him go. Because that is what they did. Andy does a whole thing about hiring him to paint his porch to... job for you, slave laboring him to paint his porch and trusting him to do it, which will teach him self-confidence the way you would a child.
Which, honestly, how long of a fucking sentence could this guy really be serving for selling without a permit?
5 days is what they said.
5 days. That's a fucking long time.
That's a long goddamn time.
But yeah, they are like, yeah, you know what, Newton, you just need some self-confidence. You've never learned to do anything in your entire life. This dude is like 53.
Yes. And a fucking traveling salesman. like not either, like, oh my god, he's lived such a pampered lifestyle as a homeless traveling salesman. He doesn't know how to work with the sweat of his brow.
And it's a whole lot of like, this boy just needs an opportunity to work for himself, and it's bootstraps bullshit. And
yeah,
I was thinking right that Newton was definitely fucking with him, right?
Up until the last second of the show, I thought that like the big reveal was going to be that he was fucking with them.
So they leave him at the house, to which at that point, right, Newton can and should just leave.
Yes.
Because he's left alone at Andy's house. But no, he just honestly tries to paint the porch and then walks back. He does a bad job of painting the porch because the paint is too thick, and then the thinner makes it bad. Maybe they have his car. They might have his car.
Yeah.
That might be it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So So they go back and they look like, okay, the porch is terrible. So then Andy and Barney paint it to give Newton confidence. They tell him that he did a good job. It's an Andy Griffith special, right? It's an Andy Taylor special of just lying. We're just going to lie again.
Yeah.
So they tell Newton, hey, guess what? You did a great job painting this, and we're going to let you go now that you're a confident, reliable man. Even though you're not, because we did the work for you. Oh, I hate this.
And they get him they do an off-screen thing of, they got him a job in Mount Pilot as a salesperson.
Not yet. That's how they close.
Oh, right.
There is one more scene. There is one more scene in between there. So they tell Newton, hey, you did a really good job of painting. Now you're a free man. The next scene, he's in painter's overalls and a hat. And he goes, hey, guess what, everybody? You taught me that I'm not inept. I can do things. And now I'm a painter. And I'm going to paint your courthouse for free. And he starts splashing paint all over the place. Which, again, makes me think, okay, this is revenge? Just leave.
Yes.
Just leave. Like, no, it's like, played completely earnestly. I know earnestly.
That you were fucking with me. And it's played completely earnestly.
I think it's played completely earnestly. It's not for laughs whatsoever. And so now they've just built this monster again, but this time, another Andy Taylor special, they just made it someone else's problem.
Barney is like, I don't know about you getting him a job. And Andy just very casually goes like, well, if we don't like him, we can just get rid of him. And it says like, I got him a department store job in Mount Pilot. So he's not our problem anymore. And they get a package from Rickles, Newton or whatever the fuck his name is, as like a thank you gift. And up until the last second when they opened it, I was like, there's going to be two turds in there or something. Of like,
right.
They'd be like, ha ha, I've conned you. You got me a job and painted the porch for me, idiots. But he just got him presents, but the presents are bad. They got him an electric razor that doesn't work.
Gibberish. This episode is gibberish.
It is like one of two things happened. One, they had half a script about a fast talking con man, and they had half a script about an idiot that can't do anything right.
And then a big gust of wind came. Whoosh! And it picked the papers up and they fell to the ground and they just did the script in the order that they found the pages. That's what happened. And to be clear, the script about the idiot who can't do anything right, that's a script they already had. They had that script completed. That's an episode of season two.
It is.
I feel like maybe someone knocked a filing cabinet over.
It is like two different episodes of this show got into the teleportation machine from The Fly and just came out the other end like, kill me. Like fucking the idiot who can't do anything right episode is like quadoing out of the fucking con man episode. Like the other option is that they started to do the con man one and fucking bailed. Like, and we're like, let's just do what we know. Let's just recycle line for line the Cousin Virgil episode. Like, I think they even, I'm pretty sure they referred to Don Rickles as that boy. So yeah. I really don't think they wrote that half of the episode for him. I think it was written for like, they have a kid.
That boy who is older than both of them.
Yes. But yeah, like it is a horrible, just abomination of an episode that you just want to shoot in the face with a shotgun out of mercy.
it makes no sense. It's so bizarre to me, this fucking thing.
It is the weirdest use of Don Rickles I could possibly imagine. Like, it is like if they had on Rodney Dangerfield and they were like, you are a guy that gets lots of respect for everyone, and has no witty thoughts about that. That is you. You got it? You can handle this, right? Like, yeah, it's like, yeah.
They brought on Mr. T to play a character who has no empathy whatsoever for fools.
Yes.
Just hates fools, does not feel bad for them, just wants to destroy fools.
Yes.
Mr. T, the fool killer. That's this episode. Yeah.
Mr. T, fool killer.
Yeah, all right. It's a little late, but there's our episode title.
I have wasted my life pitying the fools. Time and time again, the fool has proven himself to be unworthy of my pity. Load
now
shotgun.
The fool shall fear. The fool shall feel fear from Mr. T. Good topical references from Breaking Mayberry.
So it's the weirdest use of Don Rickles imaginable, just absolutely bizarre, and it's horribly written. I don't think it's ever funny.
No,
it's so weird.
Is this a fucking zero on the Andy meter? It's a fucking zero.
I think it's a zero. I think it's a zero on the Andy meter. Yeah. Shit.
I've hated episodes more than this, but like, I've never been so confused by an episode before.
It truly feels like they wrote this on the spot. Like, I completely agree with you that I don't think that there was ever a paper script. I think they just grabbed whatever they had. And they just had to film something.
Yeah. So absolute zeros for that one.
Barney Meter has some heat. Prison labor. It kind of farts its way into this message, but if you have a prison laborer do work on your house, you know what it teaches them? Self-confidence. Which will reform them more than anything else could. So yeah.
Rickles actually says, "I'm so happy I got arrested," after he gets that boost of confidence. I wish he didn't say that line, because I really wanted to give this episode zeros all around. I wanted it to be like a perfect, like, nothing. But yeah, no, there's some heat on the Barney meter. I'm going to give it at least a three.
I'm going to say where we've seen it before, so I think you're a little numb to it, but prison labor.
Yeah, hey, guess what? We also already had a prison labor episode that was way fucking better.
Yes, but yes, no, it's no ampy the word, but it is, if anything, it's worse on the prison labor, Marty, because this is prison labor that is vindictive. And he deliberately points out, like, you have been working this guy night and day, and it is just because you're pissed at him that he sold you a bad fur.
Yes, that is true.
Just because he got you yelled at by your girlfriend that you are deliberately torturing this man with labor.
Yes.
And then at the end, the guy is like, "I sure do love that you tortured me with labor. It's the best. Everybody should be tortured with slave labor. It teaches you character."
Quick reminder, there's an Andy Griffith episode that Dan and I are never going to do where a man actually, like, apologizes and thanks Andy for shooting him.
Yes.
That's like, not a joke. That is not we're not making that up. That is something that actually happens in an episode we are never touching.
Oh, and Barney raises a lynch mob in that episode. So.
Yeah. So I guess I'm going to give this a high Barney meter in place of that one, which we're never gonna. So I'm gonna say, yeah, okay. You've talked me up. You've talked me up a lot, from a three to an eight.
It's like an eight, yeah. Like, again, we've seen prison labor. This is worse than Aunt Bee the Warden on prison labor.
Yeah.
It is, and it does
also
have the
also
thing
it worse on because it's not funny. Aunt Bee the Warden is at least very funny.
And the prison labor is like cutesy in that. It's like he has to fold laundry, and this is like
he's
dig holes.
He's digging trenches. And exactly. Yeah. So that's pretty high. And then Goober Meter, Andy doesn't seem to care much about what's happening right now. Goober Meter is pretty low.
Yeah. Andy keeps, like, one. Andy gets annoyed for like 5 seconds. And after that, he's like, I could give a fuck. I could give a shit.
Yeah, Goober Meter's like a one on this.
Yeah.
Weird. Such a weird conglomeration of crap. Like, the definition of filler episode.
Like, yeah.
So, hated it.
And yeah.
And that's it. That's our show. Email us at breakingmayberry@gmail.com. I think I'm going to get us a Blue Sky account. By the time this goes out, we'll probably be Blue Sky, breakingmayberry.bluesky.social or whatever it is.
Do you want to be one of our three Blue Sky followers?
That's it. If you want to join the Patreon, you'll get access to bonus footage and new material. We just dropped our Beekeeper episode finally. We'll have new things coming out, all bonus stuff. $8 a month gets you access into our Discord and all sorts of other cool things. Hit us up at patreon.com/breakingmayberry. And that is it for our plugs. Buy a sword. And we'll see you all down at the fishing hole.
Buy a sword. Boom, 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 boom